Hello, this is Kathleen, and today, Thursday, April 9th, I'll be reading to you from the Metro West Daily News. BJ's Framingham now selling alcohol. After multiple rejections, store cleared its final hurdle, by Caroline Bunnell. After multiple rejections and renewed debate, BJ's Wholesale Club has cleared its final hurdle to begin selling alcohol at its Framingham warehouse. A representative of the Marlboro-based wholesale warehouse chain told the Daily News that its Framingham location began selling beer, wine, and liquor on April 2nd. Two aisles inside the store are dedicated to alcohol sales. We thank the City of Framingham for its collaboration and are pleased to offer our members yet another way to save, BJ's said in an emailed statement. BJ's applied to transfer an all-alcohol package store license from Liquor World at 235 Old Connecticut Path to BJ's Framingham Warehouse at 26 Whittier Street. The properties are within the same plaza, and BJ's had purchased Liquor World and closed the store. The company previously attempted to begin selling alcohol in Framingham in 2023, but that effort was denied by the city's Board of License Commissioners. BJ's appealed, prompting a review by the state's Alcohol Beverage Control Commission, ABCC, which requested the board reconsider its decision. The license board had also denied a request in 2020, a decision that ABCC upheld in 2022. ABCC issued its ruling last August 6th, saying the board improperly considered several factors, including the impact on small businesses, which the ABCC said is not an appropriate basis for denying a license transfer. The approval issued in 2025 stems from the initial 2023 application, which the ABCC returned to the board for a remand hearing held on October 20, 2025. During that hearing, license commissioners argued that transferring the license to a membership-based store would limit customer access. But Jacqueline Kepner, Deputy General Counsel for BJ's, said customers can purchase one-day memberships or purchase alcohol without a membership for an added surcharge. The board also continued to express concern that allowing BJ's to sell alcohol could negatively impact smaller locally owned liquor stores. Nevertheless, at the October 20th meeting, the license board voted to approve the license transfer on a 3-2 vote, with Commissioners Laura Medrano and Shannon McCullough in opposition. Framingham License Coordinator Michael Royce told the Daily News that the ABCC granted final approval of the license transfer on January 8th. Other nearby BJ's locations, including those in Northborough and Franklin, sell alcohol. Middlesex County DA said cold case unit gives victims hope, by Norman Miller. Every day, for nearly 50 years, Geraldine Hood has hoped to get a call that authorities have finally identified the person who killed her older sister, Teresa Corley, on December 6, 1978, in Bellingham. But as each year passes, with the case unsolved, Hood said it's getting harder to believe her hopes will be fulfilled. "My hope dwindles day to day," she said in a recent interview. But Hood said seeing cold cases in Middlesex County being solved reignites her hope. She said even though it's not the county investigating her case, Bellingham is in Norfolk County, it shows that older cases can be solved. "If I had a prosecutor like Middlesex District Attorney Marion Ryan, I really feel like I could make a difference, Hood said. In a recent interview, Ryan said solving cold cases gives hope to survivors, either family members and friends or the victims themselves, that no matter how old a case is, closure can be achieved. Ryan started the Middlesex County Cold Case Unit in 2019 after a more than two-decade-old murder in Lowell was solved. She said talking to people connected to the case made her realize how important solving cold cases really is. I just learned so much from that case, the impact it has on the family, the community, she said. In October, Orion expanded the cold case unit to two prosecutors. Each is dedicated to working on cold cases. Ryan said the goal is to look through older cases where evidence was collected but not able to be used at the time. With the advances in technology, particularly DNA technology, many of those cases can be revisited. We take a look at what we have for physical evidence now and compare that to when it was collected. Perhaps in 1990, there was nothing we could do with it, but now there is better technology, she said. That played a role in the recent conviction of Stephen Paul Gale. In December 1989, he raped two women at the former hit-and-miss clothing store. One of the victims was able to save semen from her rapist in a plastic bag. The case went unsolved until 2024, when using genealogical DNA, the district attorney's office identified Gale. He was convicted last month and was sentenced to 50 to 60 years in prison. That was the case with Gale, Ryan said. For some amazing reason, with no idea how it could help the victim, the material we could use to get the DNA from years later. We were able to develop a profile from that sample. It was not the only case solved using DNA. In 2024, Christopher Aldrich of Lunenburg was convicted of raping a woman 13 years earlier in Acton. In June 2025, Ryan identified Joseph Leo Boudreau, a former Natick resident, as being responsible for killing Katharina Reese Brown in 1980 in Ayr, a case for which an innocent man served 18 years in prison. Boudreau had died in 2004 and was thus never charged, but Ryan said he was identified using DNA genetic testing. Ryan said solving older cases can happen just by talking to people. A lot of times people who didn't talk may be willing to now. People's lives change. Maybe people were young. Maybe they were in relationships with someone they didn't want to put in jeopardy. Maybe they were frightened. Over time, people share things with people. It's a lot of different avenues we can pursue. Ryan said cold cases take a lot of resources, but she said it's worth it. Solving one case for a family, it's a success, she said. The incredible amount of time and resources that go into these cases is worth it when you hear what it's meant to these families. As for Hood, she hopes to someday get the call that her sister's cold case is solved. She hopes with the new district attorney coming in, longtime Norfolk District Attorney Michael Morrissey decided to not seek re-election. A new set of eyes may be able to deliver justice for Corley. In my gut, if maybe we had a different prosecutor, we could get this solved, she said. Haynes wins three-way race for Board of Health seat by Dan O'Brien, Milford. Diana Haynes won a three-way race, all newcomers, to claim a spot on the Board of Health in the April 7th annual town election. Haynes collected 522 votes to defeat Rosemary Cerquera 461 votes, and Scott Vecchiola, 91 votes, and win a seat that's been vacant since longtime member Leonard Izzo died in September. Haynes joins Chair Lori Ann Brazza and member Paul Mazzuccelli on the board. The Board of Health race was the only contested one in a quiet annual town election. The town clerk's office reported that just 1,131, 6% of Milford's 18,732 registered voters cast ballots on Tuesday. Former Police Chief Tom O'Loughlin earned 848 votes to get a third 3-year term as a member of the Select Board. For School Committee, incumbents Brendan Rickert, 734, and Michael Aghajanian, 728 votes, also did not draw a challenger and return for fresh 3-year terms. Other winners included Martha White, Planning Board, 818 votes, Michelangelo Bontempo, Moderator, 896 votes, Amy Hennessy Neves, Town Clerk, 948 votes, Stephen Borges, Board of Assessors, 820 votes, Edward Bertarelli, 791 votes, and Mary Frances Best, 765 votes, Board of Library Trustees. Paul Brazza, Park Commissioner, 838 votes. Leonard Morcone, Jr., Sewer Commissioner, 897 votes. Scott Crisafulli, 815 votes. And M.E. Sissy Allen, 651 votes, Trustees of Vernon Grove Cemetery. Charles Renau, Tree Warden and Gypsy Moth Superintendent, 843 votes. Philip Ciara Micholi, Jr., Water Commissioner, 826 votes. Catherine Consigli, Housing Authority, 818 votes. In addition, several residents earned spots as town meeting members. All are for 3-year terms, unless indicated otherwise. None of these races were contested either. Precinct 1, 10 votes, 10 seats. Jamie Lucchini, 53 votes. Amy Donahue, 50 votes. Keith Gattazzoli, 47 votes. David Levine, 47 votes. John Erickson, 45 votes. Peter Rasmussen, 44 votes. Precinct 2, 10 seats. Doreen Zink Harmon, 91 votes. Thomas Harmon, 83 votes. William Sanborn III, 82 votes. Joseph Zachilli, 82 votes. Alan Bertulli, 78 votes. Linda Catazzaretti, 78 votes. Orla Berry, 76 votes. Thomas Russ, 70 votes. Philip Spinelli, 68 votes. Precinct 3, 10 seats. Paul Brazza, 79 votes. Fatima Afonso, 76 votes. Kevin Pratt, 73 votes. David Ferreira, Jr., 71 votes. Stephanie Abisla, 66 votes. B. Gregory Johnson, 59 votes. Precinct 4, 10 seats. Michelle Pinto, 61 votes. Jose Goncalves, 59 votes. John Minichiello, 55 votes. Luis D'Attilio, 54 votes. Melanie Solomon, 53 votes. J. Iadarolo, 51 votes. William Besozzi, 50 votes. William Fertitti, Jr., 50 votes. Nicole Ramiglio, 49 votes. Precinct 5, 10 seats. Leonard Oliveira, 133 votes. Lauren Wilton, 125 votes. Brian Long, 124 votes. Jeremy Kiernan, 122 votes. Michael DeTour, 121 votes. Joanne Dillon, 120 votes. Jose Murray, 119 votes. William Farrell, 118 votes. Edwin Roth, 116 votes. Separately, Megan Andrew was elected with a two-year seat with 136 votes. Precinct 6, 10 seats. Rosemary Cerquera, 126 votes. Paul Malnati, 117 votes. William DeVita, 113 votes. James Assam, 108 votes. Gerald Moody Sr., 108 votes. Peter Pacella, 107 votes. Christine Crean, 101 votes. Michelle Kinsella, 101 votes. John Crean Jr., 97 votes. Precinct 7, 10 seats. Megan Hornberger, 129 votes. Janet Carlin, 124 votes. Joseph Calagione, 123 votes. Brandt Hornberger, 122 votes. John Peck, 117 votes. Michael Schiavi, 116 votes. Joseph Callery, 114 votes. Sean McGowan, 111 votes. Precinct 8, 10 seats. Linda Visconti, 127 votes. Robert Durdarian, 118 votes. Michael Visconti Jr., 117 votes. Stephen Costello, 116 votes. Cynthia Scrimgauer, 112 votes. Robert Weisenhorn Jr., 111 votes. Michael Johnson, 107 votes. All vote totals are unofficial until they are certified by the Secretary of the Commonwealth's office. Stab suspect ordered held after dangerousness hearing by Norman Miller. A Marlborough District Court judge on Tuesday, April 7th, declared a local man who was accused of stabbing another man last week a danger to the public. Judge Megan Spring, during a dangerousness hearing, ordered Jose Vicente, 46, held without bail for 120 days. Marlborough police arrested Vicente on April 1st, alleging he stabbed a co-worker in the stomach at 57 Main Street, the site of an apartment building under construction. The victim suffered serious injuries to his abdomen and hand. Prosecutor Jenna Rubin, during Tuesday's hearing, entered several past case files into evidence of several assaults committed by Vicente involving weapons going back to 2012. She showed the judge a video that showed the victim after the stabbing, walking with blood covering his abdomen and sides. She also presented crime scene photos that showed police following a thick blood trail. Rubin told the Spring that when questioned by police, Vicente said the victim was spreading rumors about him being a junkie, so he had to stab the victim, who he said punched him first. The victim told police he did not know why Vicente was upset with him, but said he shoved or punched Vicente first. This matter, an attempted murder, is clearly an escalation of decades-long pattern of disproportioned responses to others' actions, Rubin stated in court. In his, Vicente's own words, he had to stab the victim, and he was bold enough to do it in front of his co-workers and his supervisor. Vicente is charged with attempted murder and assault and battery with a dangerous weapon, causing serious bodily injury. Rubin said the current allegations and long criminal history of violent assaults involving knives and guns is a clear indication that Vicente should be held without bail. Vicente's lawyer, Luther Henshaw, argued that there are many conditions of release that can ensure the safety of the public. He suggested GPS monitoring with exclusion zones, anger management classes, daily probation check-ins, and to get and maintain a job. There is a heavy burden, to say nothing out there anybody could do to keep the public safe, Henshaw said. I'm asking you not to give up on Mr. Vincente and give him a chance to show that he is not a danger to the public. Spring, citing the seriousness of the crime and several past convictions, ordered Vincente held without bail. He is due back in court on May 7th for a probable cause hearing. Fish defy gravity to climb Congo waterfall, by Marta Serafinko, Reuters. A species of small fish has been observed by climbing the thousands of vertical waterfall, 50 feet tall, in the Democratic Republic of the Congo, in a behavior that illustrates the surprising and genius ways animals can adapt to extreme environments. The researchers documented how this species of shell-ear fish, whose scientific name is Paracineria dicey, scales the Luvilomo Falls in the Upper Congo Basin, a vast river system spanning Central Africa and home to the world's second largest rainforest. Researchers observed the fish ascending the vertical rock face during seasonal floods at the end of the raising season, typically in April and May. While this species can reach about 3.9 inches long, the researchers observed only small to medium-sized individuals, about 1.5 to 1.9 inches long, journeying up the falls. Observations suggest a fish may take nearly 10 hours to complete the slow and demanding climb to the top, moving in short bursts and resting frequently. Larger individuals of the species appear to be too heavy for their fins to support the climb. This discovery highlights the importance of maintaining the continuity of watercourses, particularly in the context of the Congo Basin, where studies on fish behavior are virtually non-existent, said Pacifiki Kiwela, a researcher in ichthyology and a member of the scientific staff of the Université de Lubumbashi in the Democratic Republic of Congo, who was the lead author of the study published in the journal Scientific Reports. It prompts scientists to be even more vigilant in their observations, as anything is possible. Who would have believed it without being close enough to check and document it with photographic and film material, that indeed some fish are able to climb waterfalls? It illustrates that there are wonders out there that surpass our imagination, Kiwele said. Some other fish species are capable of scaling waterfalls through various means. But the researcher said this species is the first one documented in Africa. Researchers recorded the behavior of this shell-ear fish on four occasions in 2018 and 2020, observing them moving up the rock face through what is called the splash zone, areas kept wet by spray rather than direct water flow. So how do they do it? The fish cling to the wet rock surfaces using their pectoral fins, supported by pelvic fins, and aided by tiny hook-like projections known as unculi, which help them grip the surfaces, the researcher said. Then they push themselves upward by wiggling their bodies from side to side. Scaled to human size, it would be comparable to a person climbing hundreds of yards vertically. The ascent is also risky. Some fish lose their grip when sudden jets of water hit them, knocking them off the rock face, particularly when they flip upside down to navigate overhanging sections. Given the volume of water at the base of the falls, fish that fall are most likely able to start climbing again. However, those landing directly onto the rocks may not survive, the researchers said. The researchers said the fish may climb upstream to find a suitable living conditions and areas of the waterway with less competition and fewer predators. News in brief. Long Island man pleads guilty to Gilgo Beach serial killings. New York. A Long Island architect admitted in court on April 8th to killing 8 women in attacks dating to the 1990s, ending a notorious serial killer case that stymied investigators until DNA evidence helped lead to the arrest of Rex Huerman in 2023. Huerman, 62, told a judge in Riverhead, New York, that he had strangled the women, most of whom were in their 20s, and dismembered some of them before discarding their bodies wrapped in burlap, the Suffolk County District Attorney's Office said in a statement. He had been charged with 7 murders, which took place between 1993 and 2010, and had been set for trial in the fall. During his appearance April 8th, he admitted to an 8th killing that was not among the charges. He is expected to receive a sentence of life without parole when he returns to court in June, prosecutors said. The Gilgo Beach murders drew national attention after police found numerous sets of human remains in 2010 and 2011 along an isolated stretch of Gilgo Beach, about 30 miles east of New York City and a short drive from Huerman's home. Investigators were able to tie Huerman to the case in part by using DNA they collected from a pizza crust that the surveillance team saw him throw away while tailing him in Manhattan. Thank you so much for listening, and I hope you all have a safe and well day.